before the last 60 or so e-fold inflation that we need to solve the usual problems of flatness and homogeneity, et cetera. Okay. So, the picture we have in mind. So we have some potential that gives rise to slow roll inflation. Something like this, where 60 e folds before inflation ends, the inflaton is somewhere at some value phi 60, and the slow roll conditions are violated at some place where reheating begins over here. So what happened before this? So the natural thing to think is that just before phi was at phi 60, phi was at some larger field value. And there are two possibilities for what the potential looks like to the right of phi 60. So the first is that it just increases monotonically. And so we'll see that under certain conditions, so we could have more slow roll inflation preceding the last 60 folds of inflation. And if that's the case, the ending of inflation can become a random process under conditions I'll spell out more carefully later. So one possibility is potential that monotonically increases. And so the answer to this question could be more slow roll inflation. And this could mean that inflation ends by a random process, which can lead to eternal inflation. The second possibility is that prior to phi being at phi 60, the potential to the right of phi 60 could have a maximum and a false vacuum. In this case, the answer to our question of what happened before is that the inflaton could have, at some point in our past, sat at this false vacuum here. And as we know, classically, phi can't traverse this barrier, but quantum mechanically, it can. So just like a particle in quantum mechanics can tunnel through barriers, fields can tunnel through barriers in field space. So I'll describe that process in tomorrow's lecture. But we see that if the potential looks like this, the answer to the question of what happened before the last 60 e-folds of inflation could have been tunneling from a false vacuum. In which case, inflation ending is a random process. And we could have eternal inflation in this case as well. Okay. So this is a broad overview of what I'll be discussing over the next three lectures. So more specifically, what I'll be telling you about today is the first picture, what's called stochastic eternal inflation. And then tomorrow, I will describe this tunneling process of vacuum decay. And on Friday, we'll see how this can lead to eternal inflation. So first, I want to elaborate on this point here, that inflation gives you a qualitative understanding or some intuition for why, if inflation ending is a random process, we might expect to get eternal inflation. So let's suppose we are looking at one Hubble patch that's inflating. So here we have, suppose space is this way, time is this way. And this is a Hubble patch that's inflating. After one e-fold, this Hubble patch will expand to e cubed, or about 20 Hubble patches. So this here is about 20 patches. And so in the picture that Paul told you about, the inflaton moves monotonically down the potential. So even though these patches still might be inflating, they all have a unit probability for inflation to end eventually. That's not necessarily true in the cases I'll be telling you about. So we're going to be interested in the possibility that some of these, today we'll talk about the possibility that the inflaton could fluctuate up the potential. So if that occurs in, say, one out of these 20 patches, and one out of the 20 patches that patch spawns one e-fold later, then there's a chance that inflation will never end. And that's what we mean by eternal inflation. So if the probability that inflation ends is less than, say, 19 out of 20, so we expect to get eternal inflation. And we can make this a bit more precise in some circumstances, but roughly what we expect. Okay. So let's talk about stochastic eternal inflation. So that's the first picture we have here, where just imagining that before the last 60 folds of inflation, we just had more slow roll inflation. So we all know that the equation of motion for the inflaton is just phi double dot plus 3h phi dot plus v prime phi equals 0. So this is the classical equation of motion. But as Paul told you, we have quantum fluctuations that on superhorizon scales become classical. So the superhorizon modes undergo a quantum to classical transition. So there are, if we restrict our attention to, if we spatially average the field and restrict our attention to a Hubble patch or a few Hubble patches, these long wavelength modes will have some influence on the evolution of the field. And so we expect there to be another term in this equation that accounts for these quantum fluctuations that become classical. So what we want to do is compute the statistical average of the fluctuations that we expect to appear in this equation. These come from the quantum fluctuations, but once they're stretched out onto large scales, they become classical. So this is just the standard picture that Paul told you about. We can compute this and compute this quantum expectation value. And this tells us about the statistical average of the classical perturbations that we observe. And so for a scalar field, in a background De Sitter space, we can compute this quantum average. And the result is that these fluctuations grow with time. At least for several Hubble times. So the way you would compute this, basically using the quantum field theory and curved space time that you learned about in a little bit about in Latham's course. I don't have time to go through this derivation, but this is the result. And calculation is actually fairly similar to what we did with Paul a few days ago. So this tells us about what sort of noise term we should include if we want to account for these fluctuations. So we should include a new noise term in our equation here. And so here this n is a random variable. And the interpretation of phi here is this is averaged over a few Hubble patches. So if we look at a simple limit of this equation, we can figure out how what the noise term should be. So let's look at the slow roll limit. And let's just assume that this term is negligible also. So in that case, our equation becomes 3h phi dot is equal to n of t. And we can solve this equation very easily for a particular realization of n. So, case 5t is just the integral of n of t over 3h. And so this is true for a particular realization. If we want to average, just put in the averages here. And so if we start the field off at 0, the noise should be symmetric. So we should get random kicks in both directions, equally likely. So this should be 0. So that tells us that n of t should be 0, expectation value. Similarly, we can compute phi of t prime. That gives us an integral of n of t prime of t 3h squared. And this should be equal to h cubed t over four pi squared. And so that tells us what the expectation value of n of t prime should be. So just h to the fifth over 4 pi squared delta t. So we can solve this equation in two limits, either the noise-dominated limit, in which case we expect the field just undergoes a random walk. So this is if n of t is large. And in this case, we expect that we have eternal inflation, because on average, the field doesn't go anywhere. And you'll explore this in more detail in tutorial tomorrow. where the transition between the noise dominating limit and the limit where we can neglect this. Karen? Yes. Yeah, we should. If we started at zero, it should be centered at zero. Okay. So you'll explore this in some more detail and see explicitly how the transition between deterministic slow roll evolution and this random walk behavior occurs in tutorial tomorrow. But let's just let's estimate where we expect this transition to occur. So let's think about what happens in one Hubble time. So in a Hubble time, we have a change in the field value that's due to quantum fluctuations. That's what I'm referring to this term as. That's approximately h squared over 4 pi squared. On the other hand, in the slow roll limit, the field will move a distance v prime over 3h squared minus due to its classical evolution. So we expect the transition between deterministic evolution and this when the random walk wins and eternal inflation sets in to occur when these are comparable. So eternal inflation should occur roughly when delta phi q is bigger than or similar to delta phi classical, which, just plug in our results here, occurs when h squared over 4 pi squared is greater than or about minus v prime over 3h squared. Let's put absolute values. And using 3h squared is equal to v, this gives us and epsilon is half v prime over v. This gives us, so over here we have like a root epsilon. So just rearranging this equation, we get something like h over root epsilon, or in terms of the potential, v to the 3 halves over v prime is about 1, setting pi and 4 and 3 equal to 1. So we have that. So this you note is basically the square root of the scalar power spectrum that we computed before. See. Thank you. Yep. So since we saw that delta zeta squared is like in terms of the potential v cubed over v prime squared. This is like square root of this. So we have v to the 3 halves over v prime. So when delta zeta is about 1, So when we have internal inflation. So can this ever occur in a region where we have control of our theory, in a sub-Planckian region? So if seems like perturbations are becoming order one, so maybe that only occurs when energy density becomes Planckian. Let's look at an example and figure out when we satisfy this condition. So the simplest potential we can imagine, m squared phi squared. So we compute the first slow roll parameter. It's just, I'm going to restore units of m Planck. So we want to see, compare the energy density to the Planck scale. So this is the expression for slow roll parameter. And we just plug in m squared phi squared. And here we get this is equal to m Planck squared over 2 phi squared. So if we sketch potential. We have that inflation ends as phi end at root 2 m Planck. So we have slow roll inflation over here to the right of where epsilon v equals 1. And here inflation ends. No inflation. Now where is this condition satisfied? When do we get eternal inflation? So that occurs when delta zeta about 1. So this is v to the 3 halves over v prime, and restoring units of m Planck. We have an m Planck cubed here, because this potential has mass dimension 4. So we have 6 powers of mass in the numerator. And down here, we have v prime, which has mass dimension of 4 minus 1 is 3. So we need 3 powers of m Planck to make things work. And so this, plugging in our potential, gives us m cubed phi cubed, ignoring factors of order unity, because we've already neglected them here. And at the bottom, we have m Planck cubed v prime gives us an m squared phi. And we can cancel off some of these factors, and we get m phi squared over m Planck cubed. So this is 1 when phi is about m Planck to the half over m to the half times m Planck. So here we have m Planck to the half over m to the half m Planck. So if we start phi to the right of this value,
we get slow roll, eternal inflation.
Which is a natural thing to think occurred if, so there's no reason that we could would want to set our initial conditions here. If we just time evolve backwards, we are naturally driven to this region where slow roll eternal inflation occurs. And finally, we can calculate the energy density here, just to make sure that it's sub-Planckian. This whole theory wouldn't make any sense, or this whole regime wouldn't make any sense if this occurs when the energy density is Planckian. If we just plug this in, let's call this value phi eternal inflation. So plugging this in, we get, so we have an m squared times m Planck to the half over m to the half m Planck squared. One factor of m cancels, and we're left with m Planck cubed, which is much less than m Planck to the fourth for small m. So we're okay. Okay, let's try to be a bit more careful. So this, so far I've been somewhat heuristic. I'll describe one way that you can be a bit more careful, which is the Langevin equation, which we'll start explore in tutorial. But for many purposes, it's more convenient to work with a probability distribution instead of a stochastic differential equation. So what do I mean by that? So I'm going to write down a probability distribution. So this is a probability distribution. So this gives the probability of phi having a value phi f at a time tf given that it had value phi I at time ti so on a randomly chosen co-moving world line. So I've explicitly included the dependence on initial conditions, which we might not usually do. It's going to be convenient for figuring out how this probability distribution evolves in time. So this this is a probability distribution that tells us if we look at many different Hubble patches, what is the relative probability that a field configuration that starts in some particular configuration at a time will evolve to another field configuration at a later time. And so let's figure out how this probability distribution behaves. So we want to find out how this probability distribution behaves. We can look at this quantity here. And so write this as an integral over intermediate configurations. So we're looking at probability that the field ends in a particular place, given that it started at phi I. And we'll integrate over everywhere it is in intermediate times. Okay, so this equation just says that if we want to find the probability density that the field ends at phi f at tf, given that it started at phi I at some time ti minus delta ti, is given by the probability that at some intermediate time the field was at phi tilde, and that in the time delta t, it jumped by an amount delta phi that's equal to phi I minus phi tilde minus phi I. So this mismatch in indices is somewhat regrettable, but it inevitably shows up somewhere. So hope this isn't confusing, that at time ti minus delta ti, it's at phi I. Okay, so given that we know the probability distribution for fluctuations in the field, we can evaluate the right-hand side. So we can write this as an integral where I've introduced a new variable here that just characterizes the quantum fluctuations in the field. So we know that the amount the field will move in a time delta t is given by its classical evolution. Plus the quantum fluctuation. So here, this is the classical part, and this is the quantum part. So what I've done here is, and this is a Gaussian, I've just introduced a new variable that when we integrate it from minus infinity to infinity gives us all the possible quantum fluctuations that the field could experience. And since we know that the variance in the quantum jumps the field occurs, the field undergoes in time delta t is given by this value. If those are Gaussian, which we expect if the field is weakly interacting, then this should be the expression we expect for the change in the field value in a time delta t. Sorry, this is supposed to be V prime. This is in the slow roll approximation, this is the field would move. Okay. So we can then Taylor expand rho in the right-hand side of that expression up there. So left-hand side, not going to do anything yet. And right-hand side, we can treat delta phi as a small quantity, and Taylor expand in that quantity. And I'm going to introduce a notation just to prevent writing out all these arguments repeatedly. I'm just going to call this rho fi. So this just means if these two expressions are the same, meant to be the same. So we get this, plus our first order term is delta phi times partial derivative spec to phi I of rho fi. Then our next order, second order term is a half delta phi squared partial phi I squared rho fi plus dot, dot, dot. And then we still have this Gaussian distribution for C. Okay. Now, given that we have an expression for delta phi, and we know how to do Gaussian integrals, we can evaluate this right-hand side. So this first term just gives us rho fi. So in delta phi, we have okay, so in delta phi, we have two terms. The first term is independent of xi. So when we do the Gaussian integral of that term, here, we just get minus b prime delta t over 3h. Then the integral of the expectation value of a Gaussian random variable is 0. So when we do the integral over xi of the second term, we get 0. Then we can look at this other term. So we'll have a xi squared term. And so that gives us a h cubed delta t over 4 pi squared when we do the integral of xi squared times rho g. We just get 1. Half here. And then we'll get other terms, but those will go as higher order in delta t. So we'll neglect those. Just work to leading order in delta t. And I missed, this came from the leading term. I missed the derivative term. Okay, so now we can take the limit, delta t goes to 0, and we get a differential equation. So from here we have divide through by delta t. This term minus this term gives us a derivative, time derivative. And then we just get b prime
3h plus h cubed over 8 pi squared.
All right, so this is a differential equation that describes the time evolution of rho, but unfortunately it tells us about how it depends on the initial conditions. So if we have some final state, we can ask how we got there. But that's not usually what we're interested in. This is a backwards equation. Fortunately, we can figure out how things go forward in time with just a few lines over here. And so to do that, if we want the probability that field ends up in at phi 3 at time t 3, given it started at 1, you can just write that as an integral over all intermediate positions it could be in. So rho 2-1 times rho 3-2. So if it goes from 1 to 3, it could be anywhere in between. If we take the t2 derivative of this, we get two terms. And we can use the equation we derived for the second term here. And let's introduce some shorthand for this. So let's just call the right-hand side L, some differential operator, L phi I on rho fi. So this then gives us and finally, we can integrate by parts and bring this differential operator onto L21. And we get partial T2, rho 2-1. That's h cubed over 8 pi squared. Partial squared rho 2-1 respect to phi 2 minus 1 over 3 h partial phi 2 rho 2-1 partial phi 2 of v all times rho 3-2 integrated respect to phi 2. So this has to be true for any rho 3-2. So this gives us our Fokker-Planck equation. It describes the time evolution of the probability distribution. So we have this equation, where I've dropped the dependence on initial conditions here. So we have two terms. So one term that came from the quantum fluctuations, one that came from the classical evolution, describes how the probability density evolves with time. Okay, and so our inputs were just, we know how the field evolved classically under slow roll evolution and what the magnitude of the quantum fluctuations were. And we assume those are Gaussian. So in the last 10 minutes, let's look at a simple example of an equation where we can, a potential where we can solve this equation exactly and determine whether, under what conditions, eternal inflation occurs. Model. Here's V and here's phi. And let's just assume that our potential is piecewise constant. So it has a value V naught on a plateau, and the plateau extends in field space from minus big phi to big phi. So if the inflaton is sitting on the plateau, we have inflation. There's some energy density. Once the inflaton leaves the plateau, inflation ends. So and so we can solve our Fokker-Planck equation by separation of variables. Let's set rho equal to some function of t times some function phi. And if we plug this assumption in there with the choice that V is piecewise constant, the last term disappears. And so what we get is just 1 over F, partial F, partial T, is equal to this first term, and there's no second term. Potential is constant. So because the left and right-hand side depend on different variables, this has to be a constant. And let's just make a choice and call this constant minus n squared h cubed over 32 phi squared. And we need boundary conditions in order to solve this equation. And boundary conditions we're going to impose are that the probability density, or the probability that the field is at a value plus or minus phi is 0. H is just related to V. Right, it's just a constant. In this case, if we had a potential that wasn't flat, then it would. That'd be it. That's why this case is particularly nice. Okay, so our boundary conditions are going to be that rho
at plus or minus phi 0. So it can't sit at this discontinuity. So then we can solve this equation with these boundary conditions. What we get is that G is cosine. And n has to be odd if we're going to satisfy this condition. And if we solve for f, so this equation just has an exponential as a solution. And let's put the normalization in f. And so putting this together, we get that rho is equal to the sum for n odd of a n times this exponential times this cosine. Okay, so let's impose the most favorable possible initial conditions for it. Eternal inflation. So the best thing we can do to see if eternal inflation occurs is just put the field in the very middle of the plateau at some initial time. So if it starts out closer to the edge, inflation, it needs a smaller fluctuation to leave the plateau and end inflation. So if we want to see if eternal inflation occurs, most favorable thing we can do to give eternal inflation a chance is start the field at phi equals 0. So we assume rho of 0 is equal to delta phi. We can then solve for an. That determines an. And that gives us that an are all equal to phi inverse. Okay. So we want to find out what happens at late times. See, is there any region in which phi is still on the plateau and inflation is still occurring at late times. And so at late times, what the most important term in rho is the n equals 1 term. It goes to 0 the slowest. So we have asymptotically that rho goes as phi inverse times exponential minus h cubed t over 32 phi squared times this cosine. And what we want to know is what's the probability that phi stays on the plateau? Probability that phi stays on the plateau so that's equal to the integral of rho from minus phi to phi. And if we plug this in, what we get, phi inverse x exponential minus h cubed t over 32 pi squared integral of the cosine. And we can evaluate this integral to get 4 pi over pi. So we see that probability that phi stays in the plateau does go to 0. If you remember, I told you earlier, this is the probability that a co-moving observer, this tells us the fraction of the co-moving volume that stays on the plateau. What we're really interested in is the physical volume that's still inflating. So even if the fraction of the co-moving volume that's still inflating goes to 0, it's still possible that the physical volume that's inflating is growing. So the physical volume inflating is equal to p times scale factor cubed, or p times e to the 3ht, which is equal to 4 over pi times 3 minus h squared over 32 phi squared ht, the exponential of this. So there are two different regimes here. So whether this is exponentially growing or decaying depends on which of these two terms is bigger. So if h squared over 32 phi squared is less than 3, then we see that we have a positive coefficient. And even though the fraction of the co-moving volume on the plateau goes to 0, the fraction of the physical volume that's on the plateau grows exponentially. And so in this case, we have eternal inflation. So this is the stochastic picture of eternal inflation, and tomorrow and Friday we'll turn to the other case that I mentioned in the beginning of lecture, where the field tunnels through a barrier. And in that case, we also have a probabilistic mechanism for ending inflation. And so we'll see under some conditions similar to this, we can get eternal inflation as well. Any questions? That's all for today.